There are few words more important in the lexicon of club cricket than wheels. You could be talking about your fast twitch quick, who cranks it up when needed, leaving you feeling safe in the ring, protected by your on-field king. You could be talking about footwear. They say the eye is the window to the soul. In club cricket, the wheel is your ticket to the circuit. If the circuit is your kingdom, then your wheels are your king. Or you could be talking about your transportation. You can hear them whispering, "Have you seen his wheels?" Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the king of cricket wheels, the Pajero Sport. This bad boy has advanced four-wheel drive performance with Super Select 2 four-wheel drive system, letting you switch between two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive at up to 100 kilometres an hour, so you can handle any terrain with ease. That means away days just got that much better. But there's more. With 3.1-tonne braked towing capacity, it's the Car Expert 2023 Best Four-Wheel Drive Off-Road SUV. That's match-winning gear, guaranteeing you make your way up the grades. Pajero Sport. Take adventure to the next level.
Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, the boys are here.
They're nervous. They're calm.
Boysies.
Get rarer.
Why is this happening to me?
Me.
We're not getting Maccas and you can blame my son.
Get a few today, did you?
It's great to contractually be obliged to be here.
Is anyone going to listen to this or what?
No, I actually don't know what happens in third grade.
You either get nude or get in the shower. Or we're throwing all your cricket gear in, bro.
Yeah, I was like, no chance I'm going to bowl you.
19th century Pax Britannica.
So, this is it. This is the last main podcast for the Australian summer. The IPL starts in two Fridays' time, and then that rolls straight into the T20 World Cup in June in the US and the Caribbean. But we farewell the summer of 2023-2024 with yet another remarkable win for this remarkable Australian team, and how that would upset so many people across the world. Of course, we can't forget how remarkable India's record is with their 17th consecutive home winning series, this time 4-1 against England. If you don't want the good times to end with your relationship to TGC, you can find us on Patreon. We can get an hour of Ask TGC Fridays every single week. When you sign up, you get access to the entire back catalogue as well, about 180 plus episodes. If you're a YouTube person, we're doing 5 shows a week during the IPL, then every Australia, England, India, Pakistan match for the World Cup, which will come back into your main audio feeds. But we're taking a break from the 2-hour-ish per week show until the World Cup. Sincerest apologies to County Championship fans. This is it, Pezza. The end of another summer of our lives.
Yeah, dog. Can't remember anything from it, but an absolute pleasure to do it. Just thinking, actually, like thinking about the summer that we've had. Had some good guests on the show. That's something you probably say towards the end of the show, but like you're looking at a Broden Kelly, Tim Rogers, Will Sutherland, Fergus O'Neill, James Allsop. And we had Barney Ronne on the Zoom the other day.
When do we have Tess and Kim in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tess Flintoff, Kim Garth.
Yeah.
Been good. Like, been good to have some people in and around the studio.
I've enjoyed it.
In the flesh. And yeah, it's another, I guess what? Well, Slug as well. Oh. Don't forget Slug.
What, the leading run score in the Shield?
Yeah. Hell of a summer. Australia wins 6 from 7 in the men's.
Mm-hmm.
Women win everything, I think.
Yep.
I presume so. So yeah.
Are you taking that? Are you taking 6 from 7
no.
if offered at the start of the summer?
No.
Nope. Well, perfection. I've got a couple of question marks about the team. So let's start there.
Yep.
Let's start there.
Okay.
Let's start with the second test match there in Christchurch, New Zealand and Australia. Australia won the game by 3 wickets. New Zealand batted first. They were sent in 162 all out. Australia made 256. Then New Zealand made 372. Australia was set 281 for victory, and they did it with 3 left in the hut. Sure. Okay. But I've got a couple of question marks. Matt Henry, player of the series. Hang on a second. What? Excuse me? An opposition player doing something good? How dare they? Or indeed he. Alex Carey, player of the match, 98 red in the 4th innings and 10 catches. Let's start there. Alex Carey wins the game. Incredible year, as we've been talking about the last couple of shows, from basically receiving death threats. Well, not basically. Receiving death threats after the Bairstow thing. Losing his place in the white ball setup during the World Cup to this. His 98 not out is the second highest score by a wicketkeeper in the 4th innings of a test. It's only behind Adam Gilchrist's 149 red against Pakistan in 1999, and it is above, now 3rd place, Rishabh Pant's 89 red at the Gabba in 2020, that must have been. So I couldn't think of a more it's a fucking wild 12 months for Alex Carey. 12 months? Yeah, 12 months for Alex Carey. And I couldn't think of someone that you would wish that upon more. Like that kind of
success. A wild 12 months.
That wild 12 months. A guy that needs to go on an adventure, you know. Mm. Yeah, from top to bottom, start to finish. In the old washing machine there. Real tumble dryer thing.
Don't get stuck.
A couple of different appliances there.
Mate, going into the game, Carey was under legitimate pressure. Like we know that the team is the team. He'd been great with the gloves, but the selectors had already shown a willingness to drop him in ODI cricket, and his replacement, who I will not name, Mr. Josh English, acquitted himself really well.
Yeah,
English makes 140 recently as well.
Yes, for WA, yeah.
Carey's starting to get out in frustrating ways, and if nothing else, failure in this game, in this game, but particularly in the second innings at that moment, would have spawned at least the greatest of battles in cricket somewhere around September, October next year, which is a Shield shootout.
Yeah.
That would have been shootout stuff.
A bat-off.
For Carey. So against that backdrop, team in trouble, no one scoring runs, comes in 5 for 80, away from home, opposition chasing history to take 10 catches, make 98 not out, win the game for his team, be player of the match, is some response. Rubik's Cubes lovers everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just imagine if he'd taken 10 catches and finished 100 not out even?
Oh, almost perfection. Finish the game. Finish me off. Talk about a bat off. Jesus Christ. There's just, I mean, I suppose any time Carey does something... There's just always a conversation about Stuart Broad's sledge of like, you're going to be remembered for that forever or whatever the exact words were in regards to the Bairstow thing. And
Broadie was seeing red at that time, you know what I mean?
And he's a little bit
embarrassed by that, even though he mentioned
lost control, didn't he?
Yeah, he lost control. And he was a bit embarrassed by that. Yeah. He's mentioned it 15 times subsequent shows. Didn't seem embarrassed.
He's good, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he's good. To be fair. I don't understand.
You know, I think like the harsh reality is, and the sad truth is that unfortunately, like he will be like that's just the fact of playing top level international sport as we all have. You know, like it was just such an enormous iconic moment against that particular batter as well, who riles people up. And unfortunately, when politicians start getting involved and making commentary about it, it's just one of the biggest moments in Ashes history, which is, I'm sorry, India, it's just the biggest series for those two countries and will remain so for a very, very long time. And unfortunately, he's going to be remembered for it. Like, it's bullshit. Like, because he is, first of all, he's just, as everyone says, he's one of the nicest guys in the team, if not the nicest, very popular guy. And I think that blowback would have affected him, and it clearly did with his form. I think the best he can do, Carey, is to make it a significant footnote in an otherwise glittering career. Now, like he's already a World Cup winner. He won the World Test Championship. He has retained the Ashes. Like, he has already done enormous things in his cricketing life. It's just unfortunate that, like, that's just going to be the thing. And that's maybe just partially in, it's just out of his control, you know, anyone that
would. But by who? Like, remembered for that by who? Like,
well, I think most people that cast an eye over cricket. Like,
if you cast one eye generally over cricket.
But that's most people, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, but, like, for him, it's like, what, his family? Like, his friends?
No.
People who actually watch cricket, like, you know, who know what goes on. Like,
I think the reality is, and it's already
internet
happening.
Incels might remember him for it.
I think the reality is that, and it's already happened, that the truth of that will be that Bairstow is a dopey cunt. I mean, that's already happening, and like, I think the more that goes on, that is just being revealed to be true. Like there is less and less controversy over it. I think as the heat of the moment dissipates over time, it'll just be like, Johnny, bit dopey there, wasn't he? And I think some of the England guys would probably...
Yeah, like if you go into that as well, it's like, remember him how for it with Carey. Like, I'd say most Australians would be like, yeah, run out, and English coats carried on.
I think
play on and whatever. It's like, once you start actually segmenting the people who be like, I remember you for this apparently heinous spirit of cricket contravention, you're getting into some like fucking British flags on Twitter bio stuff or dumb cunts. Like, and then it's nothing, you know. Yeah. Like, I appreciate what you mean about the main show. Like, Alice Carey was the guy with the Bairsto thing with what happened there. Okay, but like, I don't know. He just runs a guy out, doesn't he? And the rest is just fucking, he's the dumbest culture war stuff known to man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess my point being that, like, he's already casting a career for himself. The Pat Cummins spoke about this in the press conference afterwards. Like, he's already forming a glittering career. Just think about the things the guy's won. I know he got dropped from the World Cup side, but he was literally in the squad. He's literally a World Cup winner. And the things that he's been part of, I kept saying this about this team. It's probably the second best team in my lifetime. And the other team is probably insurmountable. It is insurpassable. One cannot pass it or surmount it or indeed mount it.
What team is that, by the way? Like,
it's Steve Waugh's team.
Which team is that? Like, for me, it's just like the Australian team pre me becoming an adult, just 18 years of age. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah, so it's probably the 2001 team, which was the last team to win in England. Mm. That's probably the best team that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And knock over England.
And then the 2005 team that loses in England is still, might even be slightly better, but they didn't do the thing.
Yeah, they didn't do the thing.
You have to do. So, you know, that by the time, by Ponting's team in 2005 was, yeah, it probably is better. But then
they didn't win in England, so.
They didn't, yeah, so they didn't do the thing. Yeah.
But like prior to that, they're just winning everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
New Zealand drew a series with Australia in like 2001 or some shit.
Is that the last time?
And they Craig McMillan said he saw the fear in Australians' eyes.
Okay. Do you want to talk about Cummins? Cummins does it again in a run chase. Three times Australia have chased over 250 since 2011. Cummins hit the winning runs all three times. Here's something weird as well, people might have seen. Those three run chases were South Africa in 2011. That was Cummins' debut. Then it was Edgbaston in 2023, the first test there of the Ashes, batting with Lyon, chasing 279. And then this one, chasing 281. What did Cummins finish with? 32 off 44, something like that, not out. He's hit the winning runs all three times as well. He now averages in the fourth innings 33.57, and that's more than Smith, Khawaja, Labuschagne, and Green. Cummins averages 17 with the bat, but 33 in the fourth innings, 13 not out. So I think it's a bit of an anomaly there where if Khawaja, for instance, who opens the batting, is not out in the fourth innings, then that would boost it. But he's, you know, fourth innings is the hardest time to bat. Cummins regularly not out, I'm going to guess, to boost those numbers.
It's not even just batting with Cummins. Like, he's just a when the going gets tough, the tough get going kind of guy. There's a great piece from Gideon on Cricket Our Tower. Pete Lawless joined as well, but Gideon talks about, like, on top of the winning runs moments, he mentions his innings in the World Test Championship final. He puts on 51 with Carey there, an innings at the Gabba, the Oval, when he stays with Maxwell against Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
Gideon actually describing Pat Cummins' stance as his ungainly stoop looks like a man lowering himself gingerly onto a cold toilet seat.
Oh, yeah.
It took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, but, you know, when like, he's in full aura mode, Cummins, when he comes out to bat. Like, you know, we've talked about this before. It's, you know, I don't know how to change a tire. Dad comes along, rolls the old sleeves up, gets dirty, you know, gets the jack out, gets the wrench out or whatever, and goes back to, you know, goes back to work to make money for the family and make the 6 o'clock swill come home later. But even with the ball, he goes, like, Australia steamrolls New Zealand in the first innings at Christchurch. Hazelwood turns him over, goes to work. Cummins, one for, doesn't need to get out of bed for it. Yes. But then in the second innings, when, you know, the ground staff even told us, like, was at peak batting, Williamson and Latham have put on 100 for the second wicket, and it's looking pretty tough to get one. Cummins comes on, bang, Williamson's out.
Yeah.
Later gets Latham, then he gets Ratchan Ravindra. So it was the hardest time to bowl all match, and it was down to Cummins to prize most of the top order. We saw him do it in the World Cup all the time. I mean, he's just him. He steps up when the team needs him, and then for the rest of the time, he lets them succeed. It's just that attitude is incredible. That ability in the hardest moments to step up and be the best player is what really, like, sets him apart. And, you know, clearly he's somebody well on his way to greatness, if not already.
I think about like the six out. So Australia played seven Test matches this Southern Hemisphere summer. Three against Pakistan, two against the West Indies, two against New Zealand, equaling seven, six wins. And obviously, you think about, okay, well, they've won six out of seven, but like the game against the West Indies, they should never have lost. But then at the same time, we're getting into the realm of like I would say 98% of people in Australia were happy the West Indies won that from a niceness perspective. Oh, isn't it nice that they could do that? Which is just goes to show how great the team is at the moment. That Australians are happy to lose a game here and there.
Give one away.
That's right. But you think about like, and of course we'd be that. We'd be completely ruthless in our review of Australia's performance. Only winning six out of seven. But it's in the context, isn't it, of like the last year and a bit, basically the last summer against South Africa out here, and who else they play? South Africa and who else?
West Indies again.
Yeah, that's right, the West Indies again, yeah. Then they went to India, then the World Test Championship, then the Ashes, then the World Cup. And you think about like everything they've achieved, and it's like six out of seven, when our observation of the Australian team during our summer was like, fuck me, they're knackered. So, and now we're in a position where the World Test Championship final is basically secured for two teams. I mean, of course it's not, things can happen, it's professional sport, but it is fucking amazing, like what they've done. So let's talk about some negatives, though.
Of course, yeah.
Steve Smith opening the batting. Here are his scores. 12, 11, not out. 6, 91, not out. 31, 0, 11, 9. People upset, obviously, as they should be, because it's not perfection. I would say those scores, 150 from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 innings. The 11 not out was, and the senior second game was chasing. The one that got my 10 wickets in there, so I was chasing not many. So basically call it eight full innings. Seven full innings. So his 91 not out is the highest score from any opener in any of those test matches. So that's something I would have thought. I wouldn't say that the other openers are, you know, batting the house down, as with every game Australia's played. Basically, they've been playing on some, I would say, relatively difficult wickets. But those numbers... I think people are annoyed by it because he's the greatest number four Australia's ever produced, maybe with him and Greg Chappell. And it's like, is this the best value? Is this the best value we're getting out of one of our best ever players, wasting him up the top, you know? Is the technique good enough to make it work? Well, it's an interesting question.
People need to remember that it was Steve Smith himself who lobbied to take this position, that the selectors did not want that. Cameron Green was going to open the batting. It's been well established now. Green said himself he was expecting for 2 or 3 weeks there, getting himself into the mindset of opening the batting. But Steve Smith lobbied quite hard for this move, and at least publicly said it was on the basis that he needed something to get him going.
Yeah.
Right? And so that, I feel like that's an interesting concession or piece of information from him. If you looked at those scores like that and it was Marnus's name next to it, not too far away, probably a little bit better, scrunted out a few more 40s in there or something, Marnus, but like you would probably say it's a form slump because of his age, right? But when Steve Smith is volunteering to change the position where he averages, what, 60-something at number four, and he's saying he needs a change, I think that's he himself conceding that something has not been right for him for quite a while, which is something that we have observed, you know, from a great distance for a good period of time. And I think that should permit someone like one to see him at a particular phase of his career right now. This is the gloaming of Steve Smith's career. When India comes out, he's going to be 35 years of age. And I don't drop him from the side. I think we carry him into the night as he deserves, arguably the best since Bradman. Like, you ask your other top order bats, whose eyes are slightly less painted on, to score some runs and carry him and let us enjoy him when he can get up, right? That's just how I see it. But you watch the Aussies bat now, Warnerless, who himself was being carried for a couple of years, and effectively Smithless, and you think, fuck, those two really did score a fuckload of runs for us, you know, and everybody else chipped in. Yeah. I've got no data to support that other than my own feelings and memory. And like, I do think people are entitled to have concerns about his ability to play Jasprit Bumrah at the age of 35 with the method that Smith is using to play, with the angle that Bumrah bowls in, the pace that he bowls in, the assistance that Australian wickets have been providing lately, you're just insane if you think that, it is a sustainable method against the best bowlers in the world. Bumrah would just be about the hardest bloke to play in the world with that angle that he bowls at. So you can wonder if his faculties are starting to go. I'm just saying that other blokes should be going big, allowing us to see Smith go round. You can't ask Smith to be the guy that like makes 500 or 600 runs in a series anymore, especially opening the batting. If he does do it, fair fucks to him. I looked at Steve Waugh's stats in the last couple of years leading up to his retirement. Now, he retired when he was like 38, 39, but yeah, against New Zealand in 2001, so you got to remember he retired in 03 or 04. New Zealand won, 2001 in the summer, 78 runs at 19. Against England in 2002, 305 at 38, a bit better. And he did pick it up for his last series when he announced his retirement at the start of the summer. In 2003, he made 267 at 44.5. Now, that's against an average of 51 throughout his career. So he's unders, like leading into it. And I think that we've come to accept that from Smith. So not only is he unders going into the twilight of his career, he's doing that opening the batting. It's like the logic is there that it's going to be really fucking tough for him.
Yeah.
Will Smith also get a Kia ad like Tugger as well? Have you seen that?
Something to think about.
Mm.
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, you got to see the salad on Tugger.
Oh, no, I've seen the salad.
Yeah.
I've seen him recently, yeah. But not on
this ad. Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, I made that sound like I've gone around to his house for tea. No, I have not. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with Smith, like, I mean, if he's not opening the batting, then that feels like what we just get. Yeah,
no, they've already said that. They've already said that's like you're opening the batting. That's it. There's no shuffling around. There's nowhere for him to go. They're also trying to regenerate the team.
Yeah,
like who would you swap him for, even with his average being unders?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you look at what Marsh has done since he's come back on the side at Headingley in last year's Ashes. I mean, he's literally played another match-winning innings, though not there at the end. And Carey scores more runs, but he scored 80, and he's literally won the game for Australia.
And he bowls,
yeah. An enormous contribution. Bowls. Mitts, vibe, energy, people play off him as well. It's nice. So that's all. I mean, that's all there. He's going to play for a little bit longer. Now, Khawaja's 36, 37. If he scored 5 ducks in a row at for the Shield bat off next year and Bancroft scores 500s in a row, then maybe there might be a change. What I'm trying to say is the team's going to be exactly the same, I reckon, until the third test. I basically got until the third test, and then... But what's happened, though, with this team recently is that, and Cummins said this again after the game, like someone does something and they keep winning. And if you keep winning, are we saying that like someone else desperately must come in? You know, you look at who's
some do things place. More than others.
And it's funny because like the person that is probably most deserving to come in is probably, well, it's either Boland or Nisa. But the bowlers unfortunately... Those guys, whilst outstanding cricketers, they're just not as good as the other guys. I mean, Boland actually played ahead of Hazelwood in the World Test Championship final. I was looking at the stats before. Hazelwood, 51 wickets since this start of this World Test Championship cycle. He is the leading wicket taker. So the batters, Renshaw, Bancroft, Harris, it's, like, again, very good, but like they're not better than the guys currently playing. So they're going to be given another run. It's so long until they play another game of cricket in white clothing. But... yeah, do you want to talk about New Zealand?
Yeah.
So New Zealand obviously were without Trent Bolt through systemic issues, that being the big three fucking the little six. Jamieson, Stressies, O'Rourke, injured, Conway, Thumb. If you have those four guys in the side, fucking hell, New Zealand are very, very good. Despite, you know, Trent Bolt being, what, 36, something like that, 35, 36. I just don't understand why Kugelhunt played. He bowled 20 overs in the first innings of the first test. In the next three innings, he bowled 12 overs total. 12. Like, if your captain doesn't want to bowl you, then why are you playing? I don't understand. They didn't pick a spinner in the first test. They did acknowledge after the game to be fair to them that they should have played Santner, or at least a frontline spinner, Santner, in the squad. They dropped a million catches, not just in this game, but in the three T20s. They should have won at least one of the five games they played against Australia. 13 years without a win against Australia in Test cricket, 31 years without a win against Australia at home. These two don't play against each other until New Zealand come out to Australia in the summer of 2026, 2027, which is the summer after the Ashes, so 3 years' time. I guess what I'm saying is, like, fucking hell, they've let it go this time. Like, there's just opportunities to win a test match here this time, especially in this test match, where they got themselves right back in the game, ahead of the game, after being violent for 162 in the first innings, 5 for 80, chasing 280. But you look at, like, the guys they're missing, it's like, it was right there for them. It was right there for them this time. But what is it? Tunnel stuff? Scared?
Yeah, tunnel stuff, shopping at the store of Australian exceptionalism. You could hear it. Mm-hmm. And see it. We were there. Like, you did. The few people had belief, you know, unless they'd had 10 Steinlagers and exiting the ground. And fair play to them. I don't have a like. My issue, aesthetically speaking, and that's the most important dimension, is like I don't have a dog in the fight with Tim Southee. Like, in terms of my relationship to him, through his career. Well, firstly, he's a guy that turns up every sort of 5 or 6 years on our shores. He looks good. You know, he was a young buck. He's been playing for as long as Jimmy Anderson, about, just not as many opportunities to play for some reason.
Yeah, weird.
Big three fucking little six. It didn't, you know, it wasn't, it made me like wonder what Kane Williamson has done wrong to be the outright captain in the Kiwi side. Wasn't seeing a lot of dynamism from...
Didn't he step down?
Did he step down?
I think Williamson stepped down from it, yeah.
Yeah, did he? I thought there was a co-captain thing going on or some shit. I needed, either way, like, I needed more seniority from Kane Williamson. I just mean on my screen.
Mate, what about when he was riding the boundary? That ain't right.
Yeah, like Kane Williamson should be in, like, close-up shots on TV with his, like, perfectly cricket-weathered face with a slight bit of zinc on his lip. Like, you know, considering proceedings with his, like, leathery, squinty-eyed face earned through 100 test matches of hard cricket. Mm-hmm. And New Zealanders need to understand that Kane Williamson is probably the only person Australians respect because he did something against us in 2015 or some shit.
Yeah.
People might say that's a long time ago, but it's basically the last time we remember seeing him.
Yeah.
He does well in global cricket. He's the rep player that, you know, other guys will talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kane, I know him. We'll show him respect in the class. But in this series, he just seemed to be like an older guy who had a specific batting role and otherwise stood around holding his dick. Yeah. And I just feel like that aesthetic, that vibe, that energy could have been used from New Zealand when the going was getting really tough. Like, even the way Kane Williamson walks up to a bowler, you know, it's just, he just has a better demeanour about him.
It makes you think, like, hang on a second, these guys have plans? And then I'm like,
scored a lot of runs in his time. Big four, top four big boys, one of the greatest non-existent confections of batting in international cricket. And yet he's in there.
Yeah.
He's in there.
See, it's not really our problem that if your captain is going to be blowing them down with 125, that's going to be tough for us to respect.
Mm.
You know, and Australia have produced some outstanding cricketers who bowl about that pace.
Mm.
And they're just never going to get a look in. And we're going to disrespect them forever. But that's just how it is.
You are right. He stepped down in 2022.
Right.
My mistake. That's why I wasn't doing that. I still want something.
What about this from Darryl Mitchell on SEN Radio?
Yeah.
We've always said as Black Caps, we're not defined by the outcomes. We're defined by how we play cricket and hopefully how we inspire our country to play the game. It sounds awfully similar to some other commentary from another big three team about it doesn't matter if we win or lose. It's how we play the game. All good boys.
Let's just read, let's just go through that slowly. We've always said as Black Caps, we're not defined by the outcomes.
Mm. It's underneath the emblem.
We're defined by how we play cricket and hopefully how we inspire our country. So we're not defined by the outcomes, mate. Everybody is defined by the outcomes.
Especially in sport, fuck me.
That's what I want to say about this. Like, this kind of rhetoric is creeping into the game of cricket. And it's got the appearance of enlightenment, and maybe it is, right? Like, I have some sympathy for it. I wonder whether this stuff is connected to the trend of players attempting to disconnect their output with their sense of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard a lot of players... we've seen a lot of players take mental health breaks or talk about the effect, the mental health illness that can come with your output in cricket, which can be a particularly brutal game. And so, you know, this sentiment from Darryl
Mitchell, and so many others in cricket, it should be said. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot in T20 cricket as well, this divorcing of your success or failure with how you feel about yourself. And it probably has very, very strong basis in like keeping yourself feeling sane. It's probably well-meaning. They play so, so much cricket. They are producing so many outcomes all the time, so they don't want to be defined by it. They're like, you know, cricketers are now on social media, whereas, you know, the older generations weren't. Like, mm-hmm. So it's absolutely rife with incentivized vitriol, and those guys read it. So I hear that from Daryl Mitchell, and I hear it from England and others. And, like I said, I've heard Aussie guys talk about it in relation to T20 cricket, staying level. Like, it is an attempt to disconnect your results from your reputation and say, no, it's about the, you know, and it's also about, like, trying to own how you're defined. But fans are part of the equation of how you're defined too. And, like, fans will connect your definition with how you, like, produce results and what results you produce.
Athletes exist for our happiness. That's the whole economy of it.
Like,
I work all week and I watch guys that are big, with big hands, and can do things that I can never do. And then their performances make me happy, or they make me sad, or angry.
Black or white.
Now,
Cummins isn't. If Cummins says that after winning, you're having a look at it.
Mm.
It's just a very convenient thing to say after you lose.
See, my level of sort of player engagement or reaction to their results is more wrapped up in the Michael Slater getting out, flushing his pads down a toilet.
Yes.
That's my kind of toxic stuff that I like. Yeah.
Wrapping up your entire self-esteem in the result.
Exactly right.
And the way you're defined as a person.
That's right. Yeah. Probably a couple of warning signs there in hindsight. But
if I got out for less than what was the pass mark in grade cricket? 16? You might get two claps from people walking off the field.
Yeah.
Anything less than that, I'm flushing my pads down the toilet.
That's right.
I'm going home. I'm writing in my journal long form poetry about my melancholy and my failure to achieve as a human.
It must be wrapped up, as you were saying, it must be wrapped up in the sheer amount of cricket these guys are playing.
Yeah.
The traveling, the hotels, maybe some lingering COVID stuff. That if you don't see it as like, I just keep doing me, if I keep doing me, then good things will come. If you don't buy into that, then you're going to be swallowed up swallowed up in the fucking wholeness of cricket that just envelops your entire life. I understand it, but also not my problem. I work all week.
It's also wrong, but like, No, what he probably means is like, not that he needs us to explain what he means, is like that's not how he defines it, right? And that probably is what works for him. And I think heaps of pro sports people, like when we watch, I don't think it's too disconnected from like the experience of watching like Travis Head and Mitch Marsh bat on the final day, where it's like, you know, we're 3 or 4 for spit.
Mm-hmm.
Even the evening before, we're 3 for fuck all. Christchurch is, you know, baying for blood. Mm-hmm. Steinlager's everywhere. Yeah. Ben Sears and Matt Henry are steaming in. And, you know, Travis Head is just collapsing the back leg trying to fucking smoke your 3-point when there's 17 guys standing there.
I'll fucking get these tonight.
No, but it is like that. And it's kind of like, it's that whole mantra of that's just how I play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. And it's, I can only presume it's some reaction to how much cricket these guys play, how many opportunities or scenarios there are in the game that can cause your mentality to go up and go down. And humans are just like, I just can't have that roller coaster every single day of my life. So what I do instead is I just come out and I do what I do. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I love my family. I like playing golf. I have a balanced life. I'm respected either way. I'm also an absolute jet, so it's probably going to work for me every so often. And then that's just the result that you get. And if you look at like the contrasting fortunes of Head and Marsh yesterday, you know, Marsh gets some luck, goes on and helps his team win the game. Head gets caught. Marsh could have got out the ball before, whatever the fuck it was, you know, but that's just how they play. And as a fan, it's really it's difficult to wrap your head around. Just like, oh, can't you guys adapt or do something different or understand the stakes are different now or whatever? But I do think like Mitchell's comment and the way these guys play are very much of a modern way of understanding the fucking, the overwhelming quantity of cricket and nature
and the
of the way
of
they
it.
Play and the intensity just as a way of retaining some kind of control. So what I want to do is I want to inspire you and entertain you, and I'm going to try my best and do the thing I do, and then that's it. So I have some sympathy for it, but fans don't see it that way. Fans are going to be like, oh, if you win, I'll bask in the reflected glory.
Look, I think there is a direct correlation of that as well with you look at Brendan McCullum, for instance, who is obviously very relaxed, and we take the piss out of him for that. Like he's always lying down, feet up.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It is, and you – Trevor Bayliss as well was very like hands off, just like let the players kind of do what they want. Ronnie McDonald, I'm guessing is more towards that as well, as opposed to what it was with Langer, where like it was way more intensity. Mm. You look back at like the first season of the test and those guys playing the same amount of cricket they are now, but being told they're fucking shit every day. I can understand from the players' perspective, it was like, this is just a bit too much for me.
Totally.
Because the players, like, I just even thinking of, mate, We cover the cricket and I feel exhausted from it, you know, like just the sheer amount of it. And you think about like travel to the games, unpacking your bag at a hotel, buses, like fucking standing in an airport waiting for your luggage to come through, having like fucking hotel meals, then being told what time training is, being thrown balls. And that's all before you get to a ground and you think about, like, okay, where are my shorts for fucking, for this team? Where am I playing? Oh, yeah, I've got an IPL deal. I've got agents talking to me.
Mm.
The sheer intensity of the amount of cricket these guys play.
Right. Looking at your phone if you failed or whatever, and like looking, scrolling through, seeing the absolute dross that's written from people all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can understand that mentality.
Yeah, that's right.
And why guys just want to start defining for themselves what it will, like what it takes for them to probably stay on mental even keel.
Right. Let's have a look at the World Test Championship table. If you can flick that up for me, Charlie, there it is. Oh,
look at that.
So that's how it's going to finish as well. With about a year and a half left of the World Test Championship, so India's on top, 68.5% win percentage. Australia second, 62. Then India and Bangladesh equal next with 50, and then the rest. And then obviously England, who play another stack of games this year, have a chance to move up the table, as they all do, I suppose. But England more so because they play more games down there in eighth. I tweeted last night, Pezza, about this, and I did some very quick numbers in the back of a napkin as I just have them lying around my house.
And a pen.
Eating bar nuts.
Yeah.
The big three, India, Australia, and England, 31 test matches, and the other six have played 23. Fucking hell. It's like, I mean, this isn't a revelation. This has been coming for a long time. We've spoken about it ad nauseum. But it is actually depressing looking at a table with numbers, and you're like, oh, three of them play fucking heaps, and then no one else gets anything else. And there's so many good cricketers around that, like, but that basically the next 6 months, T20 cricket with white ball stuff going on and
IPL, T20 World Cup.
T20 World Cup,
ripper. That's
right. And you know the thing is, that's good too. Like those are going to be, like, their IPL is awesome and the World Cup is going to be sensational in the US. First game, USA, Canada. Fuck yeah. We'll be in Dallas for that, maybe. Anyway, that's a state of play. Let's talk about India, England, the fifth test there.
Can I just say, just on the table, I noted a lot of Australians are talking about the table now, and I suspect it's because...
Yeah.
Having won the series 2-0, and we're like, we'll have a look at the World Test Championship table. Yeah. I don't know what these numbers are and how it all works out, but where are we sat and why?
Yeah.
But we got more points than India. You know what I mean? What is it, for and against?
Yeah. We've also lost 10 points for some reason.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, where's England? Okay, I feel better about that.
Yeah.
No problem.
Ha, ha, ha.
I think Australia's going to win 4 from 7 or some shit to... to make it to that final at the Oval again. Is it at the Oval? Anyway,
I think it is.
I don't even know Williamson stepped down from captaincy, so I don't know why I'm asking. But
Australia plays 7 test matches, 5 against India at home, 2 against Sri Lanka
away.
February. Yes,
in now,
away, yes.
There's no guarantees on winning 4 of those tests unless Australia fix up their batting, you know. And it will be a case of, like, I don't think it's going to last for too long, the sort of intangible explanation that someone for some reason stands up and does something. Particularly against an India team that will arrive in Australia. I think for the first time in a long time, like, that I can remember, with a really good like objective shot at beating us, and people believing that will happen.
Yeah, yeah.
The last few times, I still think most people in Australia were like, "Well, this is, it'd be a travesty if we lost." But
this time around. Yeah. Even when Smith and Warner were out, we're just not used to being turned over at home.
Yeah.
But
that's true. That first time when Finch was opening, Sean Marsh still playing? No, it doesn't. That doesn't serve it right. But that still felt like, okay, all the big Australia. Boys are out, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Guys will bowl and get nicks and whatever. And India, they don't deal with bounce well or whatever. Right. But the last two times they've come out here, they've...
The first test last time, India bowled out for 36. Yeah. And I was like, this is going to be a fucking walkover.
A cakewalk once again.
Exactly, yeah.
At best. doesn't make sense. But this time around, it's an Indian team keen to continue their record. And I've got to say, because of some recent unfortunate results from an India perspective, their record in Australia is something of immense pride, you know, that they hold on to. Yeah. So every time they come out here, they know how to play us. They know how to get under our skin. Mm. They beat us at our own game. And Australia has something in its record that it needs to correct. So it's going to be a really, really hot series.
Yeah.
India should have, a subject of fitness, Rishabh Pant back if he goes well in the IPL and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You'd imagine Virat's around. They've got young guys coming through. Their bowlers are at their peak. They'll bring their spinners. You know, Australia's going to have to be really, really good.
It'll be as bad as good a team that would have come out here probably since England last won out here.
Absolutely,
2011.
There's no sure thing. So that's another factor in the Smith conversation and carrying guys that I was just talking about. I'm not talking about the pronunciation of Alex Carey in New Zealand, but anyway, yeah, Australia's going to be doing well to get three or four. I mean, I'm expecting 5-0. Sorry, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm expecting that'll be a turnover, go to work stuff. Yeah. But and see if we can get the World Test Championship stuff done in the first series. Yeah. But should be good.
Yeah, India will be lucky to make it. India and England fifth test over there in Durhamshire. They won the game by an innings and 64 runs. England won the toss and batted first, all out for 218. That was well unders. India made 477 in their innings, hundreds to Shubman and Rohit. Then England were 259 behind in the first innings, and they made 195 in the third innings, meaning that India won the game by 64 runs. Kuldeep Yadav was player of the match. He took 5 feet in the first innings, 2 for in the second. Ashwin took 9 for in the match in his 100th test match. Jaiswal finished player of the series for 712 runs. I looked up before, he's played 9 tests, Pezza. He's already passed 1,000 runs, and he's averaging 68 in test cricket. Averages 75 in first-class cricket, so... bit unders, if anything. India now the number one ranked team in tests, obviously first in the World Test Championship table as well. In the series, Ashwin took the most wickets, 26. Tom Hartley was second, 22. Bumrah, 19, which is extra impressive given he missed a game. And mostly spinning decks, you would say. Mostly spinning friendly.
He's a gun.
Absolute gun, yeah. Jaiswal, most runs, 712 at 89. Shubman, 452 at 56 next. And then Zach Crawley, third, 407 at 40. But I want to talk about this, Pezza. I want to talk about this. Shubman's at it again. If you're watching on YouTube, Charlie, you can throw up Shubman's most recent Instagram post. He says, beachside reps, worldwide steps.
look at him. And look who it's liked by as well. That's high praise.
I think it's narrowly one of them. Chris Green.
Chris Green. Yeah. Chris, if you're getting the nod of approval from Chris Green, you're doing all right too. Now, it's a...
I think one of the Zimbabwean guys as well.
He goes...
Brad Evans, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can... analyze that as well, because he's
Oblique's looking good,
but like his pipes have filled out as well, right? Like they're in nice proportion.
How old's Shubman now?
24 sort of styles.
So he's getting to his peak fitness.
Yeah, right.
It's a nice hat he's got there as well. I mean the tones of the ocean and the sky and the sunset. Yeah. He's looking beautiful. He's got a little sea.
Do you think that towel's just draping down and bring out an oblique there as well?
What's being held up by? I don't know.
Yeah, well.
Hopes and dreams of an Indian nation thirsty for more.
It does seem to be held up by something. That's interesting. Thank you, Charlie. Yeah, thank you. Oh, fuck, look at this.
That's good.
He's just hanging down there.
Yeah,
that's... Do you think is there any sense... You can't zoom in there, can you, Charlie? Is there any sense that there is... that he is actually wearing anything underneath that towel?
I think I can kind of see the outline of his legs.
I can see an outline of something.
Beachside reps, worldwide steps.
So beachside.
Shubman, that is just absolutely outstanding from the young man.
Is that a phrase? Like I'm well past me that stuff. Beachside
I'm
steps,
not sure
worldwide.
I'm not sure if it's a lyric. I don't think reps, it is. So I think that's just excellent PR.
Beachside reps. So I'm probably being too what's the word? Like, I'm reading this too straight, but like beachside reps, he's obviously
doing some beach weights.
Yep, some beach weights there.
Yeah,
and worldwide steps. So he's just knocking around the world post series.
I mean, I don't know where that was taken.
Mm.
I mean, I think he's had that ready. I don't know where that is.
Is there a location there, Charlie, as well? We're deep diving the Shubman.
I don't think there was.
Deep diving the Shubman. No location. No location. Thanks, Charlie. Don't need to talk there. That's it. It's our show.
Sorry. Look, I mean, it's world-class all around. I mean, can you imagine? I think the comments had 15,000 comments.
Oh.
Imagine the fucking DMs. Three times that, no doubt. Mostly from Chris Green.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's right. That's the wrap.
Or Cameron Green for that catch.
That's the wrap of that series.
That's the wrap of that series? Yeah, I like it.
India have Bangladesh and New Zealand at home for 2 and 3 tests this year. Then the Border Gavaskar Trophy, obviously, in Australia next summer. Okay. No, I mean, just talking about India, I mean, it's so much of the conversation was dominated by England in this series, probably because it was most interesting and it was funny what was being said. And we'll talk about England in a second. But it's 17 home series wins at home in a row. It's so imperious. I mean, think of the guys that they're missing. And England might have had a sniff here and there. I mean, they've obviously lost one game by an innings, another game by 430 runs. I don't want to talk about England. I'm just talking about India. The guys they brought in, Padukal in the last game, Sarfraz Khan got a run finally, impressed 350s in his couple of games that he played. Kuldeep Yadav, wrist spin working in India. I don't think I've seen that before in my lifetime, including Warne going over there or other wrist spinners.
Jarrell,
fantastic inclusion. So all these things.
Jaiswal, pretty new, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I guess he started against the West Indies and got that double 100, but now he got another double 100. And then
it was no sure thing though. Like we did think India will probably turn them over because that's what India does at home. But
I thought they'd be turned over because of the quality of Shili Jadeja, who's just the perfect cricketer in India.
But Jadeja struggled with a hamstring throughout the series and was not the leading man. Despite
exactly,
he did his job on a couple of occasions. Like he won one Test match at least for them. But
out of five,
But that will be he will be remembered like Carey will for running out Sarfraz Khan in that game. Unfortunately, despite scoring 100 and taking five for whatever
that's
it was,
right.
So he struggled with a hamstring. Virat was out in kind of, semi opaque, for semi opaque reasons. KL Rahul was gone.
That's right.
Mohammad Shami wasn't there.
Yep.
And India, people listen to the show know that we're fortunate to do some work in India and get a, particularly through YouTube comments, an intense sense of the sentiment, of online people anyway. And there's some distinct sadness following the World Cup loss, and it's just there's no sledge of that in this particular circumstance. But all I'm saying is that they had work to do, India, to overcome that heading into this series, playing against an opponent that was bringing a style of game that they wouldn't have seen before. And in the early exchanges, particularly when England win the first Test, and they do their best, England, to harness momentum, sometimes they overdo it, to put it mildly, but they had their backs against the wall, India, and they showed some really strong resilience to turn it around. We can say now, 4-1, all the players leading the batting and the bowling, Jaiswal coming through. Mm. It wasn't a fait accompli. I think that's credit. That is credit to Rohit Sharma, who stood up when they needed them. Rahul Dravid takes another series with him, but it's still with India. Still feels like, what do they have to do to ascend to the level of the Asian century that we talk about? Like, are they just going to have to wait until they win a 50-over World Cup again? Is Dhoni going to have to come back? Or should everyone just be grateful that they still have a really good team? It really just comes down to ICC trophies, doesn't it? Like, the country is just waiting for ICC trophies to show the dominance and the strength and the depth that they have on and off the field.
Yeah, it feels like even if they won again in Australia – three times in a row, which would be fucking amazing.
And calls for...
And it would be... Yeah, well, of course. Yeah,
riots.
Yeah, I say bring back JL.
Hashtag.
Yeah. I still think, whilst that would be celebrated and rightfully so, it's still missing the worldness, like the fullness of a World Cup, you know?
They just have that on their back.
That's right.
That when it comes to world championships in any format.
In tournament-style play.
Tournament-style play, they don't get to be the team that lifts that thing that everyone was competing for at the end yet. And that is, I just think, the subject of tremendous, frustration and sadness and anger back there. And until that happens or that is somehow transcended, that will remain. They remain locked in that until somebody gets that trophy. Do you think a T20 World Cup unlocks that for them if they did it, for example? Yeah.
Well, that was just, basically the start of the IPL. They won the World Cup in South Africa, wasn't it? Yeah, and that basically gave birth to what's happening now.
So you think, what I mean is if they were to win it in, the Caribbean and the US, that they'd lose that monkey on the back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's still so recent to what happened, though, in November, where that is, just supposed to be the coronation. It was supposed to be everything. And, they were playing so well. They were the best team in the tournament up until the final game where Australia was the best team.
They were the best team that anyone had ever seen.
Yeah.
<It's> so awesome. Hey, shout out to Hedy behind you there, by the way.
Oh, we were doing so
keep
well.
Collapsing that black back leg. Back leg.
Yeah.
Hedy.
Holy shit. Hey, here's something from Jay Shah. You might remember him. He's the BCCI secretary. He's talking about the selection process for Rishabh Pant for some reason. I don't know why, but he is. He said this. He's batting well. He is keeping well. We will declare him fit very soon. If he can play the T20 World Cup for us, that will be a big thing for us. He's a big asset for us. If he can keep, he can play the World Cup. Let's see how he does in the IPL. So Ricky Ponting's already said he's going to come back for Delhi this year. I think he's just started doing keeping. Obviously, the accident that he had in 2022, not only is he lucky to have a leg, I think he's lucky to be alive, such as the horrific nature of that car accident. I think everyone in global cricket was can't wait to see him come back. So it's going to be exciting to see him come back for Delhi. And then if that goes well for him, then Jay Shah is saying he can come back into consideration for the World Cup. So there's that. Mo Shami isn't going to return until the Bangladesh series, which is after the World Cup. I think it's about September. He's out of the IPL and the T20 World Cup. He had surgery on his Achilles. KL Rahul is expected to be back for Lucknow.
Justin Langer's Lucknow.
Justin Langer's Lucknow, indeed. Now, let's talk about England. England admit defeat. They say they're outplayed. Also acknowledge they need to be smarter around comments made, i.e. Duckett saying, the more the better.
A few wiser decisions.
When being asked what England would want to chase. Oh, the more the better.
It's pretty funny.
I'm getting a little bit fatigued of fucking coming in here and kicking England's butt. Come on. It's just if you're going to keep saying dumb shit like that, this is the exact forum for us, for people globally to criticize that.
We don't need to rake over old graves. I think if there's, we had fun with the Duckett stuff. You had to pick it back up. You know, they've said they're outplayed and they need to rein it in with the old comments there.
Yeah. Ben Stokes says Bazball is training.
Ben, what? No, you have to say now. What was it that he actually said?
He said, Bazball's I don't like what the media call Bazball, but for me, I think it's about becoming a better person every day, a better player every day.
Yeah, that's right.
And I said, it's finally good to have a word called training.
I'm going to Bazball. Tuesday, Thursdays.
Yeah. We've got Bazball Tuesday, Thursdays. That's right.
You get their early help with the Nets.
England's home summer is next for them, of course, after the IPL. Three tests against the West Indies in July. That's after the World Cup as well. So it goes IPL, then the IPL final is, I think, 4 or 5 days before the first game of the World Cup in the US, which is USA.
A bit of time for the boys.
That's right. Some golf there. So England's home summer is three tests against West Indies in July, then two tests against Sri Lanka in September. They've got 8 white ball games against Australia in September as well. I think it's 5 ODIs, 3 T20s, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
I definitely have it in the calendar.
Yeah, can't wait to be covering every single ball of that. Then they've got 3 tests away in Pakistan, then 3 tests away in New Zealand in November and December. So there is, five for their home summer, 3 away in Pakistan, it's 8, and then 3 away in New Zealand, so 11. They've got 11 more tests. But they're playing 17 this year.
That is a lot of cricket.
Yeah, that's right. They've already played 5. Am I missing one there? Anyway, so that is what's going on with them. Now, if they win every single game, I think they can just about sneak into contention for the World Test Championship final. I think just
about. I think they will go undefeated. Not only undefeated, I think they'll win every test this summer. I think that they will play that game style really well, and I think that they'll be doing it against teams that will be overwhelmed by that game style. And so they might be in the mix, England.
Mate, you just look what it takes to win a test match away from home, just recently speaking, because it suits my narrative. But Ollie Pope winning the first test match basically by himself, other guys contributed, in that first test match, one of the greatest innings away from home by any player ever, 196, was it?
Yep.
Shamar Joseph winning the game for the West Indies at the Gabba there, whatever the figures he took. I mean, it was single-handed stuff. And then even in that game, in both those games, you just about get over the line. Like, it takes something absolutely remarkable to take a test away from basically one of the big three sides anyway. So if either the West Indies again or Sri Lanka can do that, then you're going to say something pretty special from those players. So I guess the questions are likely to be, I've got to tell you, I'm looking forward to England, New Zealand. That always seems to be a pretty good series. Last time round, you might remember that New Zealand drew the series 1-1. It was a two-test series, I think, and Jimmy Anderson was out by Neil Wagner.
Over there in New Zealand,
that's right. Yeah.
England couldn't quite get it done over there in New Zealand.
Despite enforcing the follow-on.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess the questions are likely to be for England, who does Harry Brook come in for?
Mm-hmm.
And now that Broad obviously isn't playing, is Jimmy Anderson, how long is Jimmy Anderson going for?
He could go for, it just depends how the rig is, right? He obviously wants to go on.
He's still in their best players? Probably.
Probably at home. Yeah.
Yeah, he's at no point going to get a tap on the shoulder. I wouldn't be that surprised if he says, like, maybe this summer.
You could probably say that every summer, right? Like, he might just be chasing 800. He might just go all the way. Mm. The rig's incredible.
Rig is incredible, yeah.
But
Harry Brook.
Brook comes back in.
Yeah, probably for folks. That's probably how it's going to be, right? I mean, because the conversation is like, Bairstow's form hasn't been great recently, whatever. But I just feel like the way England set their team up, it's going to be our team has a higher ceiling with Bairstow in it. The team, in my opinion anyway, is fundamentally better with folks in it. They'll win more games. But like they'll fucking smash more teams.
Yeah, but if you remember that actually the goal is to inspire people.
Right, I forgot about that.
You know, I would hazard a guess that Bairstow could probably do that against the West Indies and Sri Lanka at home. And I can see a scenario where, like, McCullum is, like, against the backdrop of a tough 10 tests against the two biggest teams, it's now time to beat the shit out of minnows at home.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to give YJB a big old reward and just let him go to town and create memories that, you know, that the English – people can, you know, wrap their mitts around and start to trumpet how good and revolutionary the whole thing is, you know, and it will look amazing. But, you know, I have heard people say that they would take a different route with Bairstow.
I was going to say, here's what I think. Here's what I think.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to. I liked what you said.
Here's what I think. I think if let's turn the England cricket team into a football team. And I think if a top level manager came in, the first person to go would be Johnny Bairstow. But I also acknowledge that their ceiling is higher with him in the side. I think there's so much bullshit around that one particular person, it distracts the entire setup. And I think if you're talking about like creating great memories and stuff, if you want to get people into the game, win heaps of stuff. Like England had a golden generation with their white ball team. Did they do it by playing amazing, blistering cricket? Partially, yes, but they end up winning stuff. Like if you win things, and look at
how Ben Folkes can inspire lots of people, especially women. No, fuck that. Let me take that back. Yeah. And men.
Yeah, that's right. I think. I mean, even look at that era where Morgan was in charge, and it's the best at that stage. Was the best ODI team that probably the world had seen in terms of like how they progressed the sport, the format rather. They were completely ruthless about who was in and out of the side. Now, I don't think Bairstow's a bad bloke or anything like that.
But they did keep their team, though.
The same way that Hales, he definitely deserved to be in and around the squad, and he was like completely blacklisted. Now, I think that's in a similar way. I don't think Johnny Bairstow's a bad guy or anything. I just think, like, his performances barely guarantee him a spot in the side, and all the stuff around him as a one particular player. This is really harsh, but I just think ruthless in
sport.
Two
tests. Would you give him two tests? Say, Johnny, can you turn it on again like you did a couple of years ago against New Zealand? Can you turn it on for us, Johnny, and give us something to enjoy where we can all, you know, stand in the crowd and go, da-da-da-da-da, you know, that kind of shit.
He's played 100 test matches and averages 35, 36. That's what you're going to get. Peaks and troughs.
Peaks at home.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not saying he's a bad player or anything like that.
I know.
I just think if you were being ruthless.
If you're a top manager.
If you're top. Then got to get rid.
Yeah. Just so straight swap for Brooke.
Yeah.
See you later.
Also, Folks is good.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the best keeper in the world, for one. And also his batting is, I would say, very nearly equally as good as Johnny Bairstow's. But Bairstow can give you the fucking highest of highs and just suck up all the lows as well.
Bairstow, on his day.
Oh, but please, sign me up.
He's an on his day player.
Yeah.
I think basketball is very on its day.
That's what it wants to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In lieu of having a great team.
Mm.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Ben Folkes is just simply consistent.
Yeah, he's just
and that's just not really hitting that.
Consistent, reliable, but he doesn't like golf, apparently.
Yeah.
Yes. He's not really one of the lads.
You know?
I don't know what they're doing over there.
It's all good.
Jimmy Anderson, 700 test wickets, man.
Mm.
700 of them. Fucking hell. You know, like, just from an Australian experience.
They're talking Phil Salt, actually. Sorry, just back to Bairstow.
Yeah?
Oh, I just saw a bit of Phil Salt chat. Interesting. I'm all for it.
Interesting. He doesn't bat up the top for Lanks, does he? Mm. He bats five, doesn't he?
Josh Butler-esque, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, Josh Butler.
Well, he's obviously a close personal friend, Phil Salt.
Indeed. I actually have a conflict of interest on this.
Gosh, I simply couldn't comment. Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah.
700 poles, right?
Yeah.
Just like he's obviously an absolute worldie. It's just a tribute to longevity, his 700 wickets, 187 tests, right? Oh, 188, whatever it is.
That's a joke.
I mean, only Sachin's played more, right? 200 tests. But in terms of fear, like, never been, like, fearful of Anderson and Ashes.
Oh.
At home? No, I'm talking about Broad, though, because they've always been together. And yeah. I've always been more fearful of, like, Broad's energy and vibe and gets on a roll. Has there ever been a more get on a roll bowler?
No.
You know, like I suppose like some of the other top bowlers, like your Courtney Walshes, etc., has run through Australian teams here and in the Caribbean as well. Just like and Anderson's just the highest skill possible. It's just like I'm talking about me personally. It's never quite had the fear. Probably uncouth to talk about that when we're talking about celebrating his 700th Test wicket. But do you know what I'm saying? He's more just consistent and reliable and steady. Don't think he's ever like blown away Australia like. Other like Morley has, or I don't know, other top guys.
I think when you got Broad, I don't know. I feel like I've watched Anderson bowl to us, particularly in England, like several times, and he's hooping at a mile, and bloke's feet are fucking concrete blocks.
Someone's going to pull up a stat. What about the time he took 8 for 12?
No, like he probably averages like 20 or less against us at home. He doesn't have that magnum opus performance like Broad does, he doesn't have his hand over his mouth, and that's just that's just 101 PR from Broad, but
flipping bales over and stuff.
It's 180, I've got it here, you're right, 187 tests, second only to 10 Dilker, 700 wickets, best of 7 for 42, average of 26, 32 fifers.
And also,
it's not bad.
Also in the last couple of years, he's learned to bowl dry. Like, I mean, if they go to Pakistan later, he's still probably the most reliable bowler.
The swing bowling is unbelievable, and he's getting better. The way he moves it through the air is unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, Australians will always reserve the right to call out that it's not exactly the same as that when he comes here, when we're awake for 2 weeks of the year watching cricket in our time zones.
Yep.
And that'll carry an unfair, unjust, disproportionate weight to any discussions
about James Anderson.
And actually insulting.
That's right.
Mm. 187 tests you do it for, and just a couple of...
Yeah, but what's the fastest ball you ever bowled?
never really saw him go through us.
It wasn't through the chest, not interested. I think I might have been living in the UK at the time when this was going on, but I remember where he had the record for like the longest amount of innings without getting a duck. Do you remember that?
Okay.
And it was like, and so there was people with like bated breath watching him just try and fucking scrum one to fine leg and get off the mark. It was great fun. But like that was like back in the day when like tail enders were tail enders.
Yeah.
The podcaster, mate. like
you know, James and, I got them in my head when we're talking about him, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I've got his averages up now against the different countries.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's like, oh, Jim, they were talking about your averages against different countries, you know. But we'll do it. Well, okay. Give me a country.
South Africa. You reckon I'd be good against them?
Averages with the ball, 30.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, let's just cut to the chase. What is it with Australia?
35.
You would never do this with Shane Warne. The respect, you know, like
his average with the ball in Australia is 34, and then in England his average with the ball is 24.
Okay,
You know, he just would not be in any way. After we've already discussed how hard it is to take tests off different countries, you know, like when you're away, he just would not be the first person whose home average is far superior to his away average. The way that he bowls.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm defending him.
But I'm not, am I sledging him?
I don't know who I'm talking to. I'm probably talking to, like, I can probably hear 100,000 people go, hey, he's fucking shitting against us.
Yeah, but you forget that no one's good against us, including people that, and people in teams that have done good things against us.
How good is Australia like this? I do have this in my head.
I almost respect Brian Lara. Yeah.
Like... like I know I actually can name friends who are going to be listening to this who are going to like I won't name them, but like I know that this will actually be upsetting them to be talking about Jimmy Anderson being good. Like that's what we're like in like right, so many right, people right. Where
yeah,
it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like
yeah
mate
yeah
what has he got to do?
187 tests. Only 700.
187 tests. Yeah. He's age 42 opening the bowling. 700 test wickets.
Played in three different
decades. Yeah, best of seven. Yeah. It's just like.
Yeah. 35 against us. Yeah.
I've never been scared of him.
He's starting twos out here.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, that's not what I had written down for my tribute to Jimmy Anderson.
Mm.
What was I talking about? Something about his batting. Which is
not getting, like, not getting ducks.
Not getting ducks, yeah. I forget how many innings he made in a row where like he didn't get a duck, but it was a record, I remember. And it was great fun. I think he made a 70 once as well. What's his highest test score?
Fucking Rick Finlay here. Yeah. Don't know how to do this. Okay, batting. Highest test score is 81.
81.
81.
Who was that against? Windies?
It was against India.
Wow.
You're doing well. Where he otherwise averages 8 with the bat.
Is he average 8?
Yeah, he's gone over there a few times, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about tail enders. Like, he's like
a podcast.
That's right. He's like a throwback to like a genuine bowler. You know, he's just
His average with the bat is 8.96 across his career.
Okay,
he's made 1,353 runs. 150. But, you know, he's hit 184 boundaries in Test cricket.
How many – has he played a T20 for England?
I would have thought so. I got to say, like, you are – I do not know my way around, like, stats guru on Cricket Info Stats. Well, he has played 19 games for T20 Is for England.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah, right, yeah. It's kind of odd, like, for such a great bowler to have only played a handful of games like that.
Might be part of the reason why he's playing a lot of tests.
Good point. Pezza, do you ever get frustrated you can't watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised in your country?
Oh, we did last week in Christchurch.
With NordVPN, I can switch my virtual location to a country.
Fucking hell, it really is the last day of school. You know, the executives at NordVPN sitting there like chin stroking going, yeah, this is the new way to promote the product.
We're NordVPN! You can watch that from any country with a VPN so you don't miss out on the action. Where were we? We were in Christchurch last week and watching KO, weren't we? To watch the...
Then we realised you could just use mobile data and it was fine, so...
Also, it was just on free-to-air. Oh, no, we were watching the India-England game, weren't we?
India-England.
Yes, which wasn't on free-to-air television.
And also Cronulla and the Warriors.
It was quite disconcerting when we were watching Cronulla and the Warriors and Sanjay Mandrake was talking about it.
Yeah, that's right. We had the league down and the cricket up.
That's right. Anyway, you can grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/TGC. What do you get with that? You get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan. Plus, here's what you get. Plus 4 months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. If you want to use it and you don't like it, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. NordVPN.com/TGC.
And it's the last week of this one, he goes. It's the last week.
I feel like it's the Catalina wine mixer. It's time to say goodbye. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Pajero Sport.
One of, if not the great integrations into this podcast.
Just like NordVPN.
268 episodes. Oh, they're all good. Don't get me wrong.
Now, see if you can complete these sentences. Because we've said this a couple of times now. Pajero Sport, it's not just any SUV. It's the Car Expert 2023 best
four-wheel drive of
off,
the year.
Off-road SUV. That's right. It's not just...
That's right.
So many car people have got in touch with us during these integrations. So just like, again, just to use your wonderful analogy the other day of Lee Trevino shaking his head. The number of people who've got in touch with us just to be like, you know, mate, there's no way you've driven off road, mate. Mate, there's actually no way. I wouldn't have picked you, Pezza, to be doing that.
I mean, car people are their own subculture. I mean, it's barely a
unlike
subculture.
Unlike cricketers.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
What's an LBW? No, what was the one we said before? If it was a gun to your mum's head and you had 8 seconds to describe the Sheffield Shield point system, call White Lady Funerals.
You're staring in your mum's eyes. Bye, mum. I love you. I love you. But this is it.
They actually had a draw to get a home semi. There's betting and bowling points. But car stuff, anyway, yeah, those car people.
Yeah.
That's right. Pajero Sport, it's not just about getting you from A to B. You might have thought that, he goes.
It's just from getting you from A to B, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's about taking adventure to the next level. You have a certain level that your adventure goes to.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is about ascending to the next one.
Next
I wonder if you know what it is. Yeah, but it presumes that there is another level.
That's right.
Now, he goes.
Yeah, go on.
Finish this sentence. With a brake towing capacity of 3.1 tons, this beast doesn't just carry your gear. It hauls your dreams.
Did you say it's tons of fun?
No. I guess tons of us could get involved. shout out Sydney Great Cricket. 01209 inclusive.
Tons of fun.
Doesn't just carry your gear, it carries tons of us.
Three point one tons.
Must be nice. Don't go home unless it's 3.1. 3.1, okay. No, caravans, boats, cricket gear, and Pajero Sport has, he goes, it's got its advanced four-wheel drive performance and super select two four-wheel drive system. Now, that's not just any four-wheel drive system.
How will I have got that?
You can actually switch between two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive at speeds of up to 100 k's an hour, which is a lot more than the normal speeds of cars when you're switching gears.
That's way quicker than a Vespa or an e-bike.
I'll tell you what, I'm glad to hear of a car that can switch gears, you know? Doesn't matter.
I just like hearing about cars that aren't involved in a divorce, if I'm honest.
There's a lot, I'll probably not for now. So whether you're cruising on the highway or tackling the rugged outback, the Pajero Sport's got you covered. So to all my fellow adventurers and cricket lovers out there, it's time to elevate your game. The Pajero Sport's ready to take you on your next big adventure with the performance, capability and style to make every journey legendary. Pajero Sport, take adventure to the next level. Thank you to Pajero Sport for that wonderful integration this summer and for backing two guys who know fuck all about cars. But seriously, I've heard from a lot of Pajero Sport people.
Yeah, that's legit. True. That's true. That's
legitimate. True. Who would have thought wheels were a big part of cricket culture?
Tons of fun. The WPL. here's what's happening in the table. No, wait, there's two games left, okay? There's two games left. That's tonight and Wednesday night.
As then, we go to where?
Then there's the Eliminator. Then Friday night is the final. Sorry.
Yeah.
The Eliminator is Friday night. The final is Sunday night. Yep. Okay. At the moment, here's the table. Delhi Capitals, first. Mumbai Indians, second. Okay. RCB, third. UP Warriors, fourth. Gujarat, last. Okay. Fifth. There's five teams.
Yep.
There's two games left, okay? Whoever finishes first goes straight to the final.
I've always liked that.
Then second and third play the Eliminator. Yep. That's on Friday night. Yep. Okay. Two games left, MI and RCB. So second and third play against each other. And then on Wednesday night, Delhi and Gujarat. It's first versus fifth.
But, that's just a round game. Is that right?
Just a round game.
Yeah.
Just a round game. So that's the situation. I'm just looking at leading run scorers, leading wicket takers. Top run scorer is Deepti Sharma, 295 runs.
I got some stats for you.
Averaging 98. Second, Meg Lanning, 290 runs, averaging 41. Beth Mooney, third. Good to have a couple of Aussies in there. 285, averaging 57. Top wicket takers, England's Sophie Eccleston, left arm spin. Jess Jonathan, second, left arm spin. And Radha Yadav in third there. You want to tell me some stats?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But I want to do it with some insights. Australian women.
Yeah.
I would look at it from an Aussie perspective.
Please.
Three out of the top 10 run scorers. Are we happy with that?
So Pez is in there. And then
it's not a test.
Grace Harris is 11th. So.
Well, okay. Yeah,
it's four out of 11.
Lanning, Mooney, and Perry.
Yep.
So Meg Lanning.
Yep. Still got it.
Still
got it.
Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
Grace Harris is the only Aussie woman in the top 10 sixes. I was just looking up the sixes there.
Okay.
We've only got one woman in the top 10 wicket takers, JJ.
JJ, who's not really even playing the side anymore.
Now, there's three Aussies in what the WPL describes as the top 10 MVP.
Okay.
Three out of 10. Still not enough for me. I want at least five.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, the top three in the MVP, so first, second, third, are each UP Warriors players.
Who are coming fourth out of five.
They're second last.
Yeah, and they've got
the first three MVP players, so how are the rest of them going?
That's Alyssa Healy's team. She's captain.
She's not in that list.
Yeah.
And then finally, and most importantly, on the WPL site, he goes, is the fair play list.
Oh, good.
Interestingly, he goes, number one is Smriti Mandana. That's not the interesting bit.
Yep.
Fair play.
Yep.
Two, Meg Lanning, of course.
Makes sense.
Number three, Harmanpreet Kaur.
Harmanpreet. On the fair play. Huh. Good to see.
I think it's done by franchise. So I think that the face of the franchise is Harmanpreet Kaur. But if indeed Harmanpreet Kaur is leading that side, that's, you know, on the podium for fair play, I think that is really welcome news.
What about this? Shaban Ismail bowled a delivery. The speed gun on broadcast recorded at 132.1 kilometres an hour in the WPL game against her side, Mumbai Indians, and Delhi Capitals on Tuesday night. In fact, she was bowling it to Meg Lanning. Mm. That's the first time a delivery has been recorded over 130 Ks in a women's match. Ismail is 35. She retired from South Africa internationals in May last year after a 16-year career. 35, throwing him down at 132. That's faster than Ollie Robinson, keep in mind, consistently. That's wheels. That's the kind of stuff that you get to play for Australia, which is the pinnacle of the sport, obviously.
It's a great development because it's that's unbelievable. Sorry, that's the wrong term to use. It's excellent.
it's unbelievable.
Yes.
I simply cannot believe it. Yeah.
Without belief, no. Yeah. It is, but it's exactly the sort of thing that would wind up a lot of blokes who think they're better than women at cricket as well.
Oh, I see. Yeah, right.
Like this would be where a lot of blokes playing auto bin, wheelie bin stuff or some lower grade stuff would be like, oh, mate, face that, no problem, jump in the nest.
Mate, Without pads on.
You wouldn't see the ball at 132 Ks. Yeah. You wouldn't see it.
Yep.
You wouldn't have faced 132 Ks in your life any point.
Mm-hmm.
At any point.
Do you want to talk about the Sheffield Shield?
Yes.
So Tassie are into the final. This is the last round of games. If they beat South Australia at Blundstone and Hobart, they'll host the final. Now, South Australia made 271 thanks to Nathan McSweeney's third 100 of the season, 117. Bo Webster took 3 for 63, by the way, leading run scorer. Now, Tassie were 3 for 27. They've been bowled out.
McSweeney runs as well, again.
Yeah.
They like McSweeney.
Interesting.
They do.
Have you got the scores?
I can get some scores. I'm doing it now.
Tassie have been bowled out for 123 and they're 30.
So 140 behind.
And now South Australia are 34 for now. This is going to be completely redundant. So basically, like, Tassie at this stage, whilst pressing record, are in position to lose a home final, losing the right to host the home final. They are in the final. Matt Wade's actually playing the game for Tasmania. He is playing for Tassie and will miss the start of the IPL to play in the Shield final.
It's a big deal for Tassie. They've had their eyes on a home final this whole this whole summer. They will be disappointed if they've missed out on one.
Yeah, so they need to turn that result around.
Do they need to win to to guarantee it, or is it the case that they can lose and still retain a home final?
They can, but it depends on what happens in the Western Australia Victoria game, which is also
and
being
the point
now,
system
and the point system, which is all very easy to follow. So the winner of Western Australia and Victoria at the Junction in Melbourne will play Tasmania, depending on where and who wins it. So Western Australia made 244. Scott Boland, who was released from the test squad in Christchurch to play in this game, while Nisa and Renshaw, who are Queenslanders obviously, weren't, probably because Queensland can't make the Shield final and who are last in the ladder. Boland took 4 for 41. Fergus O'Neill, friend of the show, 3 for 38. Vicks were 1 for 7. Maddinson was out. What's happening in that game, Pezza?
Okay, sorry. Just looking at the Shield ladder there. So
Victoria been bowled out for 144.
Okay.
And Western Australia now 6 for 9. That's interesting. Okay, and then the last game. So New South Wales need to smash Queensland and also need Victoria and Western Australia to finish in a draw and not pick up bonus points. So I think that's already done. It pissed it down the first day there in Queensland. They lost 6 hours of play. But I've just seen Queensland bowl out for 144, New South Wales 13 for 1. So I think that game's pretty much redundant, but the other games are more in play. This is all going to change literally by the second. So there's almost no point in talking about it. Because what's going to happen next time in the Shield, although like, if Tassie won the Shield, you'd be into that. Also, if Western Australia won it, it'd be a three-peat.
Well, it sounds like you just, like Tassie's in the final. They'll play either Victoria or Western Australia, depending upon the outcome of the games. And the location of the finals yet to be decided as well.
Indeed. Indeed. Is there anything you want to say before I ask TGC?
No.
Okay. Well, I thought we might wrap up the show and then do ask TGC, or do you want to do it the other way around?
Just normal chronology of the show.
Oh, okay, interesting. Do you want to do it or should me?
I'll go. From Ben. Dear grade cricketer, for context, my cricketing career is now over half my lifetime ago, and this remains too close to the present for wounds to have healed. It's out of this pain that I seek your help. Having watched and listened over a few years, I recently introduced my wife to your daily wrap-ups of the India-England and New Zealand-Australia Test Series. My wife enjoys watching the cricket, knew I had your first book on the shelf that I'm never reading again due to PTSD implications, but had never listened or watched you. We even took it a major step further last night and spent an evening working through the back catalogue of Wasted Saturdays videos. At the conclusion of which my wife turned to me wide-eyed innocently and said, "They talk about cricket like you always have." Which in context I translate as, "I always knew in general that I had married a disturbed and damaged loser, but now I know specifically why."
Harsh, but fair.
"For the first time in nearly 17 years of marriage, I felt truly seen. Thank you, grade cricketer. Thank you. Unfortunately, every mountain peak includes a valley. With that same wife, over the past 12 months, we have headed up to our local tennis club for a hit 1 to 2 times a week. We don't compete. We just hit the ball back and forth, sharing the success in getting a rally going, applauding improvements in each other's skills, enjoying the bucolic parkland setting of the courts, and sharing a sneaky kiss at the net while we collect the balls." That is wonderful. "True joy has been found. However, as we wrap up our hit each Thursday evening and collect our things, the boys playing Section 5 or below in that competition turn up. The term boys is a wide one, spanning blokes in their 50s with beer guts and a higher than Australian average divorce rate, down to the odd 14-year-old with a wicked kick serve and high probability of owning us all as slaves in future due to their ability to code. As the competition begins each Thursday evening while we water and bag the court, profanity and self-admonishment begins to ring out over the parkland. The type of emotion on public display indicating genuine belief that if the serving percentage was increased just slightly, more consistency was found at the net, and they had any sort of backhand, Roland Garros would be a short step away from the uneven and poorly drained Melbourne eastern suburbs." Oh, what are we saying here? Entuka?
Yeah.
We laugh at this, the wife and I, yet my terrible secret is that I look over my shoulder as I leave each Thursday at the Section 5 boys and think, that is living.
Mm.
The consideration of dumping the hit with my wife in favour of a go at Section 5 or below weekly grows stronger. Having identified true joy, why is it that I want to throw it away?
Mm.
I raised this with my psychologist, who subsequently decided on a career change. Earning $120,000 as a roadworks lollipop holder was far more attractive than dealing with my shit. Thus, I come to you, grade cricketer, for help. Clearly, this issue, while manifesting itself on the tennis court, has its roots in fetid trauma, remnants of a long past cricket career. What should I do? Ben, P.S. My sex life is very healthy. Appreciate you asking.
Well, I think this comes down to just the deeply ingrained sense of mankind's to compete. You know, like it's just in the DNA. You want to compete. You're having a great time with the old miso soup there. You know, you're having a hit back and forth, sharing love, sharing life with one another. But what you really want is to fucking destroy a talented 14-year-old, kill their hopes and dreams in the same way that other senior men in the community did to you. But you seek that. You seek that complete decimation, partially of yourself as well and the spirit lying therein.
Mm.
But I think it's just competition, isn't it? Like you seek competition. Am I still the best? It's like when you walk past someone kicking a football at a park. You're always having to look over the old shoulder there, being like, can this guy play? Same thing on a tennis court. How's that forehand? How's that kick serve going? You know, you're always measuring yourself up with other men that you pass, even in a community setting of a local tennis court. Come Roland Garros.
Yeah. There's the very well known Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Yes. And it starts at the bottom with like physiological needs. Then it goes to safety needs, love and belonging, esteem, and then self-actualization. And as far as I could tell, wanting to destroy 14-year-olds and spend time beating or losing to 50-year-old divorcees, that would fit within physiological needs at the bottom,
I think,
wouldn't it?
I think so.
Whereas what you have so beautifully outlined in the relation, describing the relationship with your wife, where not only does she, like, she fucking watches cricket with you and humours you, watches some of the dumbest shit known to man.
Yeah.
One of the greatest grifts of mankind.
Yeah.
She probably doesn't even want to play tennis with you, and she does it with you anyway to try and satisfy and show you that she recognises and cares about your urges. And she even kisses you at the net.
Mm.
And
what's that like?
Oh, I don't know. Don't fucking ask me. And as you even say yourself, you feel truly seen. Like looking at the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, she gives you safety, love and belonging, and esteem, which then leads to self-actualization, the desire to become the most that one can be. And here you are fucking betraying her, like going behind her back saying, I still just want to beat a 14-year-old in tennis.
Yeah.
I can understand why the psychologist doesn't want to work with you anymore and became a lollipop person.
But don't you think
it's a trap.
When he's playing tennis and he's hitting the forehands back and forth and it's being returned nicely, you just wonder like, what if I hit a bit harder?
And this is where I will offer some advice.
Okay.
Because I would have imagined this would have turned up in his in the letter, and it was sent by mail. Like, he doesn't seem to have said he hasn't engaged in these rallies, whether you're doing against your child or a friend who's lesser than you, or your own wife, or father, or grandparent, great grandparent. Like, it's very permissible every so often to smash one down the line.
Just to let him know you're there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or go cross court.
Yeah.
You know? Like just to muck around. But especially down the line, especially if they start approaching the net. Just whip one around them there.
Is this getting into the realm of like, I wonder if I went back to any sport, would I be better than what I was before?
Of course. This is exactly where it's going. Like he's the imagination of what
it might be is always better than what it is. Mm. Mate, your eyes are probably painted on.
Yeah.
Yeah. His name?
Ben.
Ben. It is like be satisfied with the imagination, because if you go and try and play against this 14-year-old, then it's not going to end well. However, he goes, I wonder, perhaps he needs to sit down with this very understanding wife of his and say, just give me a month. And if his wife has anything about her or any wisdom, and it seems she does, she'll know that it'll probably take a week or two and it'll come crawling back to that tennis match and YouTube videos of the grade cricketer.
Yeah. What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't say, just give me a month and then go see an escort. I'd keep it to tennis.
The woman or the man?
The man.
Mm. Yeah. That's the other thing, Ben. You've got to understand, if you decide that you don't want to play this tennis match,
yeah,
your wife might go and visit male escorts and then decide she'd like to make a few changes in her life as well. While you're off trying to beat up on a 14-year-old child, she might decide that she enjoys the sex on offer from a male escort.
Ironically, on the net.
A new tennis partner, if you will.
It'd be a lot more than kisses at the net.
What would it be?
I don't want to say.
Neither. Like the, like that French bowling coach in The Simpsons when Homer decides to buy a bowling ball for Marge.
Yeah.
She nearly gets into a very hot sexual tryst with a Frenchman.
That's right. So it's just something to think about, Ben.
Got to understand, he's thinking about this so monodirectionally, isn't he?
Yeah.
This is something I want to do. I want to do this.
Butterfly
effect. This is about me.
What's
that? He got no fucking thought about what impact that might have on his wife.
Fucking selfish.
No, seriously.
Have a look at yourself,
and
Ben.
And he thinks he's this immature fucking excuse for a man.
Oh, what are you doing, Ben?
He's got no. He provides with his flowery writing, provides no insight at. into what his wife might do. To him, his wife is this inert object who just stands, sits there waiting for him to return from his 14-year-old tennis game.
Yeah. Pathetic.
Fucking grow up.
Pathetic loser.
Just be careful, Ben, that she doesn't see herself off to several male escorts. First it starts with a massage. Then it's a four-hands massage.
Well, that'll just about do, Pizza.
What a summer.
What a summer it's been. Hey, thanks to everyone that's joined us along the journey. If you've just found us over this summer, in whatever capacity, on the internet, on the YouTubes, through your ears, through your eyes, and indeed, through your hearts. If you want to join us and continue to join us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/greatcricketer, where we'll continue hashtag Ask TDC Fridays every single Friday. Moving forward, the IPL is coming up, Pezza, 5 shows a week for that bad boy. We're looking forward to that, rolling into the World Cup. Can your team do the thing that you want them to do? Is there anything you want to say to finish off the summer?
Thanks so much to everybody who supported us. This pod has been going since like nonstop since October. Mm-hmm. So it's a good 6 or 7 months, and it's been I mean, I was joking at the start, but it's been super memorable. We've had 1,000 guests. I just read a couple of, like, guys who've come on. We had Spencer Johnson, Jake Fraser McGurk, we had Watto, we had Gideon. That was an interesting one. Kim Garth, Tess Flintoff, we had Zorba on the show, Adam Gilchrist joined the show, Robelinda 2 joined the show. Do you remember that? Brody
the channel.
Channel.
Rob Moody's still alive.
He's still with us.
Yeah.
Sure, Broad joined the show.
Broady. He's good, isn't he?
Sids came in with us. So did That's Matt
right.
Renshaw.
That's right. Yeah.
We had Nathan Lyon on the show. We had Will Sutherland, Fergus O'Neill, and all the people that I mentioned before. Finchie came in.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Broden, Tim Rogers, James Allsop. It's been pretty good. We had a great live show of, like, a great run of live shows as well. Our biggest ever live show in Sydney, Melbourne after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Being able to go to New Zealand was amazing. People who listened to our dailies that went onto the pod feed as well. It's been a pretty big summer for TGC, even getting, you know, car integrations.
That's right.
All been unbelievable.
All the way to getting getting 3.1 tonses.
And can I say, while we are doing a thanks to people, our producer, Charlie Bishard, who does everything as well, has overseen the whole thing. Sorry to say your last name there, Charlie, but I'm sure you'll cut that because you don't want any association with us. Charlie does all of our clips.
And he's a real person. And promise he's real. Promise he's real.
We met in New Zealand the other day, Laura McGoldrick, who's quite a big presenter over there, and she said, you know, whoever does your clips and does your production, give him a big pat on the back.
We'll let him know.
Yeah, and I said, no, I wouldn't have thought so. Wouldn't have thought so, Laura, anyway. And don't fucking talk to him if you're thinking about poaching him or anything like that. But yeah. CB, best in the business. There are a couple of things at the top of my head.
We will return to this main podcast ahead of the World Cup before the end of the IPL. You can obviously find us during the IPL on YouTube, and you can find us on Patreon for the entirety of the IPL and the World Cup if that's what you want to do. But hope you have a wonderful time and your football team does the things that you want them to do. And indeed, your county championship
Shire. Yeah, Sean Connery.
Does good things for you and makes you happy. And I hope your county picks up Shoaib Bashir in the loan auction. We'll see you guys again. Fuck, it's going to be so soon. See you later.